Welcome to the Ortho Joke Podcast, a joint production of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery and Ortho Evidence. Join hosts Mohit Bhandari and Mark Swankowski as they discuss current topics and publications in the world of orthopedics and beyond.
Well, good morning, Mo.
Hello, hello.
I think you've got something different than I got, but I got the traditional Ojo mug. There it is, Tim Hortons, the best coffee franchise, I will say, in North America. I know there's people listening from Boston who are going to really object the Duncan crowd. Perhaps someday we could do an Ortho Joe episode on the
Just a blind taste test. I think we do a blind taste test. You know, just let people decide.
Yeah, it would be interesting. Highly interesting. But anyway, I think actually this episode is going to be released when you're officially the editor-in-chief. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much.
And tag, you're it.
Well, yes. Well, I mean, I'll go without saying, and I think we'll be saying it multiple times in the next little while, but thanks for everything you've done, Mark. You've been an incredible steward of this journal and a leader and a mentor and a friend, so it's been amazing.
Well, thank you for that, but I would say that we, the trustees, have selected the most capable individual on the planet to do this job. So congratulations. But we have a episode today where we're just discussing things recently published. And interestingly enough, twice in the last week, I have given remote presentations to some Ukrainian colleagues at the front. And the basis for the presentation goes back to some research that I became involved with in the late 1990s, early 2000s, called the LEAP trial, which was a prospective cohort study on patients receiving limb salvage or early amputation for severe lower extremity trauma. And obviously, that kind of a question ethically could never be subject to a randomized control trial. Some interesting information came out of that. The hypothesis was that patients receiving amputation would have better functional outcomes than those receiving limb salvage. And it turned out that wasn't the case. And it turned out that patient factors, specifically social support and educational levels, were the most impactful on the functional outcomes from these procedures. We also learned from a later study published in JBJS, a seven-year study, that over those 7-8 years, that amputation was actually more expensive than limb salvage. You spend the money in the first 2 years for limb salvage, you spend it the rest of the patient's life for amputation. So that is background for why I picked this manuscript, which we just published in this most recent edition. It comes from our colleagues at Metric. And again, I have to point out to the audience that I have a conflict of interest. I do chair the Data Safety Monitoring Board for Metric, but that's not why I chose it. The outlet study was basically the exact same study design in the military population following the Iran-Iraq conflict that was done in the LEAP trial. And it had very interesting findings. The actual outcomes with amputation surgery were better, likely because the vets, as you know, have lifetime prosthetic support for their injuries. But this is a secondary study, kind of adding on to one of the findings of the LEAP trial published in the 2000s, was that partial foot amputations had much worse functional results than transtibial amputations. And this is a secondary analysis addressing that question. Fram is the first author for the Metric Consortium. And they basically found that indeed the SMFA scores were worse, although not significantly different, for patients undergoing distal compared with transtibial amputation. And more patients with distal amputation had a complication requiring surgical revision. So an interesting study that, building on the LEAP trial, which, as another aside, and I'll shut up because I've been talking a lot, but the LEAP trial was actually the first large clinical trial that was funded by the NIH, by NIAMS. And the success of that trial, I think, built on the willingness of NIAMS to support large multi-center multinational trials. So this ain't an arts, it's a, ain't an RCT, but it is research design, Mo.
Yeah, a thing that I would say is, and I think the authors themselves, Mark, did a really great job of, providing that context. And if I could, I'll just read that, like sort of the limitation section, not because I'm looking to undermine the results, more just to talk about, sort of the realistic challenges of doing observational work. And then I think we could talk about, it's one thing to say, well, it'd be nice if there was a randomized trial, but this is one of these types of problems where it would be very difficult, if not impossible, right? You couldn't do it. So
Couldn't.
then how do you use the best available evidence, which this would be? But the authors say, and just for context, the comparison that was used in this observational design was 17 distal tibial amputations versus 75 patients who had had a transtibial amputation. And the authors write, small sample sizes and unequal variances between groups are related sources of bias that reduced the statistical power achieved at the 5% level of significance and limited our ability to conduct additional analyses to adjust for confounders. And that's a big one, right? If you don't have enough patients, it's the confounding. And that's what randomized trials try to do. They try to limit, sort of some of those challenges, including surgeon experience, preference, and injury characteristics. So imagine if we had had, let's say, 17 patients times 17 patients in a randomized trial. Well, we would have the same concerns, right? We'd say the sample size is too small, it's very hard, it's unlikely that they're balanced prognosis. So the hardest thing, I think, in without randomization is how do you make sure the two groups are similar enough that you can actually, judge whether outcomes are different or whether they're just two fundamentally different groups of patients, because of the fact that, the choice to give one procedure or another wasn't necessarily based on a random event, but more of a, in this case, more surgeon expertise, I presume. So in these situations, what could they have done? Well, they did exactly what they could have done. They tried to collect the largest, sample of patients they can. They collect data very, very meticulously. And I think what they did, and it appears as such looking at the tables of the papers, that they present the data honestly. And so it lets all of us kind of make a judgment. So some of us will be compelled by the results, and some might say, I wish we had more patients. And, and I think they wish they did too. But that doesn't negate the importance of observational studies as helping us move, sort of the needle forward. And I suspect that's probably a big part of the reason that the journal, thought this was important and wanted to get this message out.
Well, let me ask you a difficult question that I've been asked before, but I think you're better equipped to answer it. I know people listening to this have had it. What's better, a relatively underpowered RCT, or let's just say an underpowered RCT, or an observational study?
Well, you know what? I'll flip it around and tell you something I say all the time is what's more dangerous? What's more dangerous is a small, poorly conducted randomized trial. And why is it dangerous? Because people believe them. That's it. The word randomization is a very powerful tool. So just to label something as randomized isn't enough, especially certainly not in 2024, it isn't enough. And while it's really, while it's laudable that, you're trying to randomize and you're trying to do everything you can, and even small studies that don't necessarily meet statistical significance or meet the hypotheses, that doesn't mean they're not valuable. They're actually, as you, I think you yourself have been a huge proponent, right, of a negative finding and trying to understand that. And maybe we need to do more of that, right? Certainly, we're seeing that in the literature to understand that better. But a well-conducted, to answer your question, a well-conducted observational study that has sufficient study size, which is one, and has enough outcome events that you can truly, make some assessments, sort of kind of getting over some of the challenges of confounding, is a hugely powerful design. And I would argue that is at best better, and certainly when done well, as good as conducting a randomized trial. And you might remember, Mark, it's got to be maybe over a decade ago, but there were a series of publications that came out in the New England Journal of Medicine that really compared randomized trials with very high quality observational studies on the same topic. And they basically said that a high quality observational study had results that were very similar to those of a large randomized trial. And I think that became the message, right? So it's not just saying a randomized trial, but it's doing a good quality study. And if you're doing an observational study, do a good quality study. And
Right.
that's just the way it is. And it's hard to say. And doing a high quality observational study, you know more than anybody, having been involved in some of these very large observational programs, is about as hard as doing a randomized trial. Like, it's not like they're
Absolutely.
easy, right? There's no easy way to high quality, right? So, and high quality leads to high impact. So.
Right. And that just brings up the important point that before anybody embarks on a randomized trial, you really need to have a serious discussion with partners at other centers, et cetera. What is your commitment to getting this done? What are your patient volumes? What sort of sample recruitment and agreement to participate in the trial information do you have that will guarantee us that we're not going to end up with an underpowered result? It's so important in the initial steps of a trial. And shortly, you're going to find out that one of the biggest complaints you're going to get when we reject a manuscript that is an RCT at the journal is, what are you talking about? This is an RCT. How can you possibly reject it? And the obvious answer is it's dangerous.
Yes. Well, listen, I've
And
had many RCTs rejected. Not that I've done many RCTs, but I've had many
you've done
RCTs
a lot.
rejected. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
But the sad part, I don't know whether it, well, let me let you reflect on this. This for sure, these underpowered studies get published, for
Yep.
sure. And is that worse than burying those results?
I think, so the one thing is that if someone has gone through the effort to collect data and then honestly try to make a study work, and despite your best efforts, despite your best plans, things don't turn out the way you want to, is that information useless, right? And one might argue, well, there's nothing to be gained from it, so let's just pretend it, let's just move on. But if you share that insight and you share why things didn't go well, I think that's hugely instructive. And we're seeing that a lot now, Mark, in outside even the surgical literature, where there are groups that are really focusing on, well, there's a Journal of Pilot Studies, for example, which just talks about that. It's the expectation is that you're not getting out meaningful results, but you're giving out meaningful learning. So someone else taking on that same project could learn from you the same way you'd want, right? If
Right.
someone had gone through some challenge, and I'm about to embark on that similar program, I would love to either speak with that group or ideally kind of get a sort of a tale of what happened so we can avoid those. So there's a lot of lessons in those. Now, the fear is that a negative finding is perceived as being truly negative rather than just an underpowered study. And that has to be really clearly delineated. But at the end of the day, it's our job in many ways, all of us, to become pretty good at understanding evidence, right? So, if we're going to consume evidence, we should have some. If someone gives information and tells us one thing, but the data says something else, then we should have the confidence to say, I'm not sure the conclusions match what I'm seeing. And
Right.
that really is something at an individual level that we all want to do. Obviously, you want to trust groups to be able to say, you know what, if that's coming out in that particular group, I've trusted that they have gone through that process and they've already thought through those issues. But that being said, I think ultimately who's responsible? The individual.
Well, here's something for you to think about in your new role is maybe we need to require in the abstract, because we know that most people only read the abstract unless they're really involved in research in that area.
Sure.
In red, two sentences on the limitations in the abstract.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
Maybe
you're
we
absolutely
should
right.
consider that.
You know what? I think that's an important point because like the one thing I loved about this paper was, first of all, it was just, it was very detailed. They presented all the information, but they were very, very honest about what you can do and what you can't do with the information presented. And so I like that. It wasn't like, this is the definitive, answer to all the issues, but it was certainly a step forward, and they provided that step forward, which I think is important. That's because it also gives insights to others who might consider thinking, oh, I might go forward. I might continue this work. This is excellent. I want to continue this area. And it gives opportunities to figure out where the challenges might be. So I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, something to think about. But if I could, I would like to just maybe in the last couple of minutes just return to the topic of this is amputation level and the whole debate about how far should you go to salvage a limb when amputation could move the patient forward sooner. And all of these in the outlet study included with the LEAP trial studies have provided an immense value in discussing information with patients to make an informed decision about what's best for the individual. Do they want to invest a year or two in salvaging the limb? Because it's clear from both these studies that multiple readmissions, multiple surgeries to gain optimum functional outcome is very frequently required. Or do they want to get back going earlier? It is really the question. And I think one of the most valuable things that has helped me in these discussions is the longer term study that we published again in the journal on the, you know, the 7-year results, and that, you know, the average number of prostheses for an individual patient in the first 2 years is 5. The functional results with the most advanced lightweight titanium prostheses were the worst early on. And over a lifetime, the patients will be continuing to see the prosthetist. They won't come to see the orthopedic surgeon about their limb, but they'll see the prosthetist for the rest of their lives, incurring expense. So these are things that are very, very valuable to have at your availability to discuss with patients and their families about what's best in an individual. And thus, we return to the value of well-done prospective research in an area where you can't do an RCT.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, Mark.
Well, I talked way too much on this. Oh, I came back. I'm not sure exactly what happened. Probably a loose cable or something. But yeah, thanks for this discussion, Mo. I look forward to our next one. And
Yeah.
until then, enjoy the Tim Hortons. What'd you get? Did you get
Just a
a mocha
medium.
or something or
No,
what?
just a medium regular. Just
Regular, no
middle of the
cream.
ground. Yeah, just medium regular. That's it. Nothing
Medium
fancy.
regular black, huh?
Yeah, and I can actually, I can, yeah, I can't actually order at a Starbucks because I get confused. I genuinely get confused. There's too many options, and I don't know what small is. And I don't know. Like they don't say it the way that, you know, just say small. Just say small. Just say medium. Just say regular. I don't understand the grande, vente, whatever. So, anyways,
Well,
all good.
you need a trip to Italy. That's the bottom line here.
True, true, true.
Maybe we should put on a symposium on research design in Italy.
I
Then
like
you'll
that. I like that. I'll
change.
learn. Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Okay. Have a good day.
You too.
Yeah. Bye bye.
Yeah.